Addis Morton, Veal 7. So you were sent to this little ruin in no man's land. Yes.
And then there were three people there. One had to go back for some reason. I mean, you normally didn't stay longer than 3 days to sleep there for the next evening. And before we come to this ruin, I asked the captain of the because he was very ambitious to be in the sea. But very courageous, had already had high up decorations for his release in the war. He might go into the situation in the sea. He was quite a nice man, actually. And I asked him where for the Germans. And he said, we're about 115 yards away from the German situation, you see. So then he introduced me to the sergeant and two other men. And he was with his pastor, a very young career. In a true environment I'd never dreamed of, you know. And again, there was the first time where I was really facing the situation. I wasn't frightened, but it was uneasy to stay unpleasant to sit in the darkness, surrounded by your enemy, not knowing what to do, where the rifles, but we were never really trained on rifles because of the artillery. In the real war situation, you're supposed to do everything suddenly. And we were had a little bit, which I didn't know at the time, a trade union attitude. You see, we were trained for, if the tank came, we would destroy the tank. You see, that was our job. But if infantry came, we were trained to fight infantry. This was not our job. We had the rifle. But I think, which I didn't know, as they on the whole, they had no intention to fight with these weapons, but I didn't, this was all unknown to me. So, when you heard any noise, you thought of slight noise, you thought they were there. Because between the night, everything is amplified. You see, hear much more than you hear during the daytime. Because other noises are not there. It's peculiar, I never know why that happened. So I wasn't happy, I wasn't frightened, but I was a sort of ignorant. You see, I mean, it was a sort of peculiar situation, which there's a big question mark next. And the 12 o'clock came and I woke this up, checked up, and I started sleeping quite well, you see. And I woke up and started to shake. And they all killed themselves in laughter. You don't have to shake here. You see, every drop of water was carried. And I was used to shaking. I felt dirty, you see. I didn't. But I wasn't happy. I would rather have even less water. And that's what it was unimportant. And then we stayed there for 3 days. And we could look through the ruin with binoculars, we could see the German lines. I knew them. I was told why they were the Germans, that I couldn't see anything. They could show by certain things that there must be people, but you never saw anybody else, nothing. But when you looked at our lines, they ran around with tea, they walked as if they were in a picnic. You could see every flag, chicken legs, every important thing. Which all that time already half amused me and irritated me. And I wouldn't have minded if the Germans would have done the same thing. But the Germans are they really there? It's just not the whole thing, figment of their imagination. And then the fun thing started after a while. And that's very interesting, which I never expected to happen. It was terribly boring. I mean, there was nothing happening, totally quietness. You couldn't go out, you couldn't sell anything that you had to sit there and We started to bombard the Germans. And the others who said, that's unfair. They said, he thought, and I, why do we provoke them? Because as soon as we started firing, they started firing, you see? So they fired, you see? That you usually result in some landed in all areas, other than the area where they were supposed to land. And this, of course, was, you didn't know the outcome, you see? You wouldn't know what would happen, you see? Again, you had to wait. You went full of joy. I wasn't full of fear either. I was just sort of thinking, what happens next, you see? Right. But then that stopped again. And then one thing happened, which made me quite embarrassed. After shooting, some people must have been injured on our side, you see? But you don't see that they're all totally sitting in and sort of fortification window with sand and stones and so on. And then suddenly, it's a quiet thing. The artillery fire on the Germans stopped. And we looked, and there was a two ambulance people with a barrier and carried somebody out who was wounded and had a problem. Like you said, the Red Cross. And the Germans stopped, as I said, immediately let them walk out, and once they were out of that, they started shooting again. And that's the effect, as my English powers said, yes, Jerry, they are fair. They are these, not like the Italians, the Italians who would put a dagger into you, you see. They don't expect it. They would admire the Germans, you see. I was silent, you see, didn't see the word. I couldn't say anything. I was quite impressed myself. And to make things worse, a day later or so, the thing happened in reverse. The Germans had somebody who came with a flag, you know, and we kept on happily firing. But I think this is more out of inefficiency than out of anything else. And we are furious, you see, that we weren't as decent as the Germans. Among other things which I found out later, and was in hospital on the under which had this pneumonia. And we were we had tents with Red Cross, you see, where all emergency quarter was for the people who wounded by shells or anything, you see, even pneumonia. And they could have sent me back to Naples, you see, but they waited first to give me some new drugs which were tried out, which were very effective. So I didn't have to take me back to the Naples. But while I was in the hospital, we were bombarded from the Germans. Of course, could see our plane. And this was odd because we had a Red Cross on. This wasn't their tactic. But what I didn't know because it was bedridden, I couldn't see what happened to the outside. Behind our tank, you see, tents are quite beautiful. I mean, I'm talking about the time I walked out, there were over 100,000 people on this whole area, and this was very busy. Behind our tent, this Red Cross, we had 10 tanks, and we thought they wouldn't see it from there where they were, but they saw it. So they ignored the Red Cross, you see. And the doctors were furious, not with the Germans, but with us, that we had put the tanks on. This was number one. And I had another good story, and that is the Germans were. If I would have gone by ambulance boat from Anzio to Naples, when the people who couldn't be treated were sent by a cost vessel to Naples. The Germans did come with small boats and stop the boat. So they had the boat with the wounded, would go on board of the boat, would salute the officer in charge, and say, quickly have a look at the wounded. And went on, and they saw they were all wounded to this. They were quite badly wounded. Then they saluted again and left again. So, perfect. And I have to go a little bit ahead later on, when we were in Italy, north of Lyons. We liberated the town, and the people there showed us the graves of hundreds of people, children, women, peasants who had been executed by the Germans. So they had another side to it, you see. They tried to be with us in that group, with the Italians that was there. because up to the last moment, I had the feeling they still hoped they could get, by that time they had landed already in France, but they always thought, this is my opinion, that Britain might come in the end in America on their side against the Russians. See? And therefore they tried to keep a good image. It's all played, see? But of course the people were so unsophisticated they couldn't, if they thought really they were the gentlemen. See? So it's possible to be a gentleman when they come. I thought this, but I never told the people because as much as I thought I'd become a Nazi. I kept quiet and never joined these sort of chorus that Germans are fair. They didn't know at the time that I was on German news. They knew I was a foreigner. But they tactfully didn't ask me, and I tactfully didn't say anything to see. Because I mean, I was 2 years in Germany, I could take in prison. I had always hoped if I was taken prisoner, I would be taken prisoner with hundreds of other people. And then it wouldn't have bothered very much, you see, but everybody to interrogate, but only interrogated a few, and I might slip in, so sort of, as a British, full British, but then the Germans would never have thought that I was naturalized, you see, because of course it would be naturalized, you see. Nobody knew that I was naturalized, apart from a colonel.
Did but it worry you?
And that
you knew
the name, you see, the name Helmut Mohr would have been not the right name for the situation, and that's why I was Henry Ernest Morton.
Yes, when did you change your name?
Actually, I changed it. I put it in this article, not going quite correctly, because I forgot about it a little bit later. I changed my name at the time when I joined the artillery. See?
When the Royal Artillery.
Yeah.
Right.
While I was still waiting and still taking part in this no man's land business, one evening, a chap came, as usual, with all the food he needed there, these cities, which were very heavily supplied. He bought two very large parcels. And given these things are for you. So I was very puzzled. But when he kept them, they very light. And I just couldn't understand where the parcel could come from anywhere. I opened them. And it was Pesach, which is a Jewish festival, where they are reminded to leave Egypt. And this was always celebrated with a special bread, which was called matzah. Very, very light weight. Quite nice, you can get it wild as biscuits here, without this big thick thing. And I was amazed, because I was about 200 meters from the Hermann Göring regiment, and found myself with these parcels. So I said to the chap, said, you have to take them back. And he was, had been told to give it to me, you see. It's very kind and very nice, but I really don't want to. I didn't want them to go into explanation. So he took it back again. It wasn't very heavy. It was really nice for air. But I was very puzzled. Later on, I found out the Jewish community in New York, because they were under American management, had sent for all the Jews from the master, which they were accustomed to eat during the Easter and not eat bread, you see. And half I was amused and half I was irritated.
Yes, why were you so worried about it, irritated?
I mean, it's a symbolic sign of being Jew. I mean, when they see you would have taken prisoner, they would have known already, immediately, it was sort of, here, I am a Jew, you see? But, a German Jew, I was from the living. And so this was, at that moment, I was not in the mood something like this.
It had Hebrew on the outside.
So this was not really on the program. And then we had, when we came out of this position, we were taken straight to the harbor, where the Americans had built underground cinemas and could see the latest thrillers or crime stories from Hollywood, which were specially filmed from Hollywood to Tokyo. And then we got very nice cakes and marvelous coffee, very sort of strong American coffee, which I normally didn't really mind, but it was a treat, and biscuits. And then we changed our underwear. And the underwear was replaced with brand new underwear every time. And we felt very happy, Charles, you see? And it was really, quite amazing. I was very impressed with it, you see? And the whole thing was really quite different from normally. We always had, actually, we had always very, because we had a special regiment, you see? The best food I had in the army was in Italy in these circumstances. It was quite different, but also the atmosphere was totally different. The officers and men spoke to one another as if they had no rights. They were very, very powerful. Until they came out again, and then gradually it came back to normal. But things were quite interesting too. When medals were given, very few, when we got medals for a military course or military battle, out of 120 people or up to 2,000 people in the regiment, we got, the men got about five, not regiment, the colonel was given five medals, you see, and the officers were given 10 medals or 20 medals, you see, a military cross usually, you see, or military medal. And for them, the major or the colonel had a headache what to do with it, because everybody had been equally involved, you see, and it felt he had to give them, he couldn't have them back. And because they did it very quickly, very nicely. It had usually, I mean, everybody was equal. And I mean, I wasn't in the worst. I mean, I wasn't entitled because the others really had before had a terrible experience. So, of course, I wouldn't have had any help because for obvious reason. So, now they had to distribute it. They distributed it to all equal. The one they knew was the most popular among the others. And everybody was very happy with this. Seeing we both counselors. And nobody was at jealous, you see. That was very, it was all very, very, very well done. I mean, I was really impressed. And then I had fun when we were out of Anzio, and I mean, school had all the numbers that I told you, I could tell you 100 times, escape and so on, but it's all the same story. I was came out apart from my pneumonia, which was very quick, competitively healed. But when we broke out, I was at the climax, because we were then told we should take a very active part. We were supposed to attack the Germans, and the Germans would all concentrate attacking us, and then the Americans would come from the other side and march to Rome. And when this whole thing was supposed to take place, first of all, we again had a sort of a function which would eliminate us further. And again, that was there. It was a bit uneasy, I must say, you see, because it was a bit much. And just 2 days before the breakup occurred, for once, when the army often changed their mind, and sometimes to the better, sometimes the worse, they suddenly decided we would not participate in that, because we had been so involved in the, somebody must have said, you know, people have already such that he was to keep them out. And when the breakout came, the breakout came from other parts of the book, of troops. And that was very interesting, too. I've never been in such a situation again. We expected, of course, heavy resistance from the Germans. And it started off just like we expected, and then it was quiet. This happened too, as I told you. So we waited, nothing happened anymore, we waited, nothing happened, and then we were told to advance. And the whole division advanced towards home. And then we found people who had been, we found them with German bodies, because again, peculiar thing in the war that it's always had, or it was just in this particular case. When you surrender to the enemy, you are legally required to surrender. But in reality, they would accept prisoners as long as they had not shot, fired the shot. But once, if they, according to military rule, the soldier has to fight to the last bullet and then can surrender. But in reality, once he shot, when he came out, he was shot too. So you get them. And when we went towards Rome, to our surprise, because there was no resistance at all, all we found from time to time, there were towers, and outside the tower, a dead German. They obviously had shot from the towers, you see, and then went down to surrender, and they shot only the battle. Particularly the Americans were very useless in this. And so he saw, I never saw a British man killed, but only saw it in Germans killed. And then we found out the way to Rome was totally free. What the Germans had done, it was actually on the eve of the breakthrough of the landing in Normandy. And the German general staff must have decided, forget Rome, give the Rome to the Allies. They have to feed millions of people, they will have their hands full, they can take the news. And they thought they cut it and went right up to the north, see? And it was not on the program, first of all, what was behind it, you see? But how gentlemen the Germans were, the first thing which I ever found out, we passed also the headquarters which they had been in. fully taken here. So, of course, I was there. They were a special unit who went to the headquarters, you see. And there, there was still one German soldier left. He was to say hello, you see. And more can tell you the nasty thing. And the police fathers, I have to tell you, when this fight was, when they had to swallow the sea, etc., before I came, quite a lot of people deserted. Couldn't say to them anymore. And surrendered to the Germans. And what happened was, when they were taken prisoner, they were interrogated, and we only were supposed to say my number so and so and so and so. Legally, you didn't have to say anything more. But what the Germans did, they were very nice, sit down here, give them a cigarette, give them a glass of whiskey or something like this, and chatted with them. And then the officers who were interrogating said, asked them about the regiment, and they couldn't say enough. See, everything they knew, they said to them. And they saved them and then put them in the prison of war camp. But what they did was, they acted diabolical. They left these copies of these interviews all there for us. And after the war, they were court-martialed. Isn't it terrible? That was what they said. You know, the decent Germans, you see, they were so nice. That was the English. I kept quiet, but I took note of it, you see. So we had liberated
them. And they were in that little headquarters with the one soldier.
Yes.
These interviews.
Yes, I pointed it out.
So going into Rome, what was that like? Would you have been the first group in?
No, not quite. The Americans insisted. We were equal, I think. We got a bit later. Actually, we got it in just a few hours later. But that was wonderful. Well, that was incredible. They came. We were there at 2 o'clock. We were at 5 o'clock. The roads were blocked on both sides. There were thousands of Italians. And they clapped. And they even now can clap. It was so incredible. You know? It was quite and once it amused me. The Germans literally went out one part of Rome and we came in the other part. And you know, they all ran around the Italians with red arms and six months of their communists, you see. They were partisans. They were posters all over the street, long live Stalin, Roosevelt, and Churchill. And it was an atmosphere which I never experienced again. It was really wonderful. I mean, they literally kissed us, you see, harmed us, and they come to us and so on. It was really, and this was after 30 years of dictatorship, of fascism, you see. It was I knew what a dictatorship was. My mates didn't know. They weren't, they liked it, but they weren't aware of the significance of it, you see. I mean, it was really one of the most marvelous experiences I had, you see. It was wonderful. And then on Saturday, Emil Wien, I have to tell you, I was informed that the headquarters of the, before we left Antigua, we were still in the adjutant quarters again, and said, here, that's the letter which I got from the headquarters, was furious. He gave it to us, which he shouldn't have done, you see, it was addressed to him. And if you got your letter from the people who joined you, we would like to tell you that during the war, you're not naturalizing anybody, but and only in cases of national importance, we don't consider the cases important. I'm furious, and I was furious too. It was a great they had done it. And then came funny climax about that, which caused them the other thing I was going to tell you. We were told great news that our general wanted to inspect us and give the notice of it. His name was General Penny.
Penny.
Never of him again. The previous general of our division had been General Alexander, who became Field Marshal. Because I told you, a very special division. This chap was supposed to be quite nice. He looked very empty. He looked very, very uninteresting. They all, and his adjutants all looked the same size, like in a film. And the funny thing was, our Sergeant Major, after announcing the great news, the general would come to see us. Very great honor. Anybody who has any grievance should tell the witch about it, and the general would be delighted to deal with it. And I'm a person my husband who takes things literally. When somebody says it, I think they mean it. So I went to the Cardinal General and says, yes, I would like to see the general. And I could see that he was a wonderful person. He was slightly embarrassed. And he said, why do you want to see him? And I told him the story. He knew, everybody knew the story, you see. That they refused to naturalize us after we beat them and they were in Nancy, and he knew that was fine. He was in charge there, you see, and he knew the whole story. So I thought, I should. He was a man, I should. I could. I never had any visions, you see. And I could feel this chap wasn't happy, but I didn't see this. It was just as it is. And next morning, we had a huge officer, Ben Navy, born in London. And he was a hard war hero. He had destroyed tanks, the only one who had destroyed some tanks. He was a very nice chap, anyhow, and very popular. And he came and said, I'd like to talk to you. And I walked with him and he said, here you want to see the general. I said, yes. He said, I understand that. He said, he was an English born dude. He said, I can understand it. But would you do me a favor? Everybody liked him very much. He said, yes, of course. You're perfectly entitled to do that. Let's see what you're doing. I would be very glad if you didn't do it. And I said, why? You see, he said, you know, this is a formality. And the general doesn't expect anybody to ask him anything or comment any request. And it would be a bad reflection on our battery that he says, can't you sort out the things yourself, you see? And therefore, he was Jewish. I know perfectly, but you would be there, would be very grateful. But it is, of course, somebody asked me this, and it's always, you see? And I waited. Now, the Sunday, etc., here I moved in, I think, on Friday or Saturday, and Saturday, Friday came to me, tomorrow you go with me to Rome. I said, why? I want to show you something. I like you, but I like it if you do.
Who was this?
This is an officer.
Ben Levy.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Of course, I'm again, this is kind of honor to the officer. I was a gunner, Lewis, that's Lewis. The honor takes me especially by jeep to London, to Rome. And when we went there, I met in Paris, I teach us the synagogue, because it's the first synagogue since the Nazis and stuff. And this was the second very all the people were hidden, all the people said, I said again, I had a very, very, very overwhelming. So I told them, I'm not going to synagogue now, and I don't think, yes, that's why Hitler destroyed the Jews. I didn't discuss it, I don't understand. I told him, I thought, he said, but he said, I mean, yes, it's fine to believe what he wanted to believe. He wasn't even Orthodox. But it wasn't an Orthodox synagogue either, it was a very liberal synagogue, and going to the years was Italian, and what he was. We were the liberators, you see, and we were very, very proud that we had helped. So that was even, we must be Jewish. This is England. He says, after a week, I have another prayer for you.
Tell me more about the synagogue. Was it a very crowded, did many people go?
Yes, because, I mean, as well as you see, quite a number of Jews, of course, they look like Italians. And the Italians from the whole were, by that time, set up as the Germans, you see. And sometimes try to hide them and try to help them, you see. But still, there are quite a number, of course, that are killed. And they, of course, all the long time, they didn't know that they wouldn't be killed tomorrow, you see. I mean, it was a very, very dicey situation. And it was really, I mean, a very difficult situation. And the minute the Allies were there, they left, you see.
And it was was the synagogue intact? It hadn't been.
I don't think it was used very much. Mm. See, I mean, because he didn't want. They weren't refused there, you see. But if they were there, the just taken them. But he managed to kill quite a number. It was a very, some very terrible thing. It happened while we were on the beach, but I don't want to go into this. But then we went to the seat of the Pope, special audiences of here, who cooperated with the Nazis very much. And later on, some of the criminals. The concentration camps sent into South America. He looked like Truman, maybe more like a diplomat, you see. He was brought on a sort of throne, carried in, and there were about 50 other ranks and 20 officers. And then he was carried in, and the Romantic officers said, give His Highness, His Holiness, three hoveys in the Vatican, you see. Shot a hooray away, and he was very embarrassed. I was like, it's not really quite right. And then he gave us a speech. And